Welcome to the podcast of Thousand Harbors Zen, featuring talks with Cohen France. This podcast is made possible by generous donations from our listeners. To contribute or to learn more about our community, please visit thousandharborszen.com.
The eighth precept is the precept of not withholding Dharma assets. And if you're like me, the first time you encountered that, your first thought was, what are Dharma assets? That's the part that really catches our attention. My understanding is that, you know, in a really simple way, the Dharma assets have to do with teachings. It has to do with not being protective or controlling of the Dharma. And of course, these originate in monastic contexts where there are positions of power. Right? You can let people in or you can keep them out. And historically, different traditions have developed in different ways so that some of them, for example, have secret teachings. And you can only get a hold of those teachings by doing certain things. Or many traditions have developed so that teachers have things that they can offer or withhold. And so you're a little bit at their mercy. This particular tradition, at least in how it aspires to be, doesn't have anything like that. There's nothing I can keep from you because there's nothing I have. And there's no secret thing that you're going to get if you stick around long enough or if your attendance is really, really good. It's just all laid out. And rather than having it be a secret or having it be something that unfolds from me, it's something that unfolds in front of you. So that how you understand these teachings and this practice today is different from how you understood it 5 years ago and is different from how you'll understand it 5 years from now. And that's not anything that anyone can give or take away. It's just all there. But it begs the question, of course, is that all there is to Dharma assets? And if we think about it even a little bit, I think we conclude that if something is of the Dharma, well, that's a lot of things. In fact, maybe it's everything. In fact, it is. And so not withholding Dharma assets becomes simply not withholding. And the question becomes, what do we do with that? At the center of Buddhism historically is the question of clinging, the question of attachment. Right? I think sometimes when we're speaking in shorthand about Buddhism, we talk about it as if the issue is dukkha. It's this dissatisfaction. But when the Buddha laid out the Four Noble Truths, he talked about dukkha and he said the problem is clinging. That's why we have this other problem. Clinging is the problem beneath the problem. And so much of the question of Buddhism then becomes, how do we not cling? Well, across traditions, one approach has been a kind of renunciation. You let go of things, right? Maybe specifically because they're the things you want, or being more practical, maybe because they're things you just don't need. And so there's that sweater that someone gave you 3 years ago that you have never worn, but it's such a nice sweater. It's a really high quality sweater from a store you really like. And so it just stays there. Part of not clinging is recognizing, oh, I can let this go, right? Or in a more formal sense, it might mean losing your name. It might mean shaving your head, taking up an entirely different life. That's one. But then we get into kind of two tracks. One, an early track for approaching clinging is to try to break through attachment itself. And there are little ways of doing that. We might remind ourselves of the impermanence of all things. We think about the, you know, our favorite person in the world and how we always want to be around that person. But then, in this model, you would always remind yourself, yes, but that person will not always be around. So I should start letting go now. And then in many cases, it goes even a step further, where there's a kind of a cultivation of revulsion around the things that we're most attracted to. So as a response to, for example, sexual desire, you might train yourself to remember, you know, what people look like on the inside. Yeah, that person's very attractive on the outside, but inside, they're just goo. So I'm going to think of them in those terms, and that will dampen this sense of desire that I have. That will give me a break. And when I think about my own body and how protective I am of my own body and of my own life and how important I think this physical person is, I'll think about my digestive tract and how I'm really just a machine for that. That's all I am, but I have eyes. That's one way of approaching desire, is to try to just to dissolve it actively by seeing the other side, right? And that has had a life for 2,500 years. And that's interesting. But in this tradition, at least, that isn't the way it went. And in many traditions, there's something else that developed as a response to clinging. And it wasn't about breaking through desire. It was about acting from its antidote, which is offering. So when you encounter something that you want or encounter something that you feel a clinging to, rather than trying to convince yourself not to, instead you cultivate a kind of muscle memory to give it away. Because it's so great, you offer it or you offer yourself. If it's you, you offer yourself in service. If it's that sweater, yes, you give it away. But in the moment you receive it, you give it away. You hold it up and you say, may all beings have a sweater this great. When you eat, first you offer up your food for everyone. And then you say, may my life, which is sustained by this food, function as an offering. So everything becomes framed in terms of giving. So we circle back to this precept of not withholding. Right? The same muscle that clings in all the ways that we cling is the muscle that withholds, that keeps something back. And the same muscle that is able to let go of something is the one that offers. They're just a hair's breadth away, saying, I'm going to let go of this sweater, and I'm going to give this sweater to you. They're almost identical in terms of what is required of you to do it. So much of this practice, and if we want to, we can say all of this practice, is about not withholding. It's about offering in all of its various forms. When I say to do things with two hands, so that we lift objects with two hands, that's a kind of offering. Not because someone receives some great benefit, but because when I hold it with one hand, there's something I'm holding back. I'm not doing this in a total way. I'm doing the minimum that I need to do this. There's a difference between standing and standing up straight. There's a difference between listening enough to get the main points so that you can say, mm-hmm, at the right time, and listening. And in every case, the latter requires a kind of stepping forward. It requires you to let go of a basic self-protectiveness that thinks there's something I need to keep from me. Sometimes that manifests as fear. Sometimes it manifests as a kind of laziness. We feel, well, I just shouldn't have to do so much. When we do something fully in the way that we move, in the way that we speak, in the way that we listen, in the way that we conceive of what we're doing, We are operating from the opposite of withholding. Here is where it's both beautiful and frustrating. Because in all this offering, you don't get to have any control over what anyone else receives. You just give what you can. I'll stop there.
You have been listening to a Thousand Harbors Zen podcast. Please visit thousandharborszen.com.